Hello, my name is Andreina.
Hi, my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles, a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
We want to dig into a selection of period films, and while we review them, find out why we love them and what effect they have on us.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
In this episode, Marie Antoinette. So Gabby, today we're talking about a film with a widely known historical figure at its center. A figure that has given much to talk about for the last two centuries, and that's Marie Antoinette.
Yes, Nene. And not just in general, a normal, regular biography of Marie Antoinette, but Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette, the film from 2006. And it was a movie that caused a few controversies among critics.
Indeed, it did. But why exactly? We'll try to find out through our conversation.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. But let me start with the easy part, movie facts.
Okay.
Marie Antoinette is a historical drama. It was released in 2006 and was written and directed by Sofia Coppola. It shows the most important years of Marie Antoinette's life leading up to the French Revolution. And maybe we have to make this clear. It is based, loosely at least, on the biography of Marie Antoinette written by Antonia Fraser. That's the one that Sofia Coppola chose to orientate her script. It stars Kirsten Dunst as Marie Antoinette and Jason Schwartzman as King Louis XVI of France, just to mention a few of the main characters. And it won one award. it won the Oscar for Best Costume Design. So how about the plot, Nene? This was just a sketch of the facts.
Thank you, Gabby. As you mentioned, Gabby, the story follows Marie Antoinette from the moment she arrives at the French court. Then it follows the story through her marriage to Louis XVI. Then the struggles of the young couple, the struggles they face to consummate their marriage. And then we see some of Marie Antoinette's happier years as a queen, as a wife and mother, until 1789, when everything comes crumbling down with the arrival of the French Revolution. So essentially, the movie actually is trying to portray almost the entirety of a life, which is usually a very hard thing to do.
Yes, totally. So, first of all, we mentioned before, it was kind of, if not really controversial, at least it was polarizing a lot. Why do you think this is? We have an American, relatively fresh director making a very French story. This is maybe one of the most pivotal stories of French history.
Yeah.
And the main roles, Queen Marie Antoinette and King Louis XVI, are both American actors. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I love the word that you use, polarizing. Yeah, you know what? When the movie came out, I remember reading pretty much every review that came out, because that's one of my favorite things to do, read movie reviews, even if I don't watch the movies. And I do recall that the movie wasn't received that great. Like, it wasn't yeah, it wasn't beloved by critics. This was Sofia Coppola's third movie. She had already made Lost in Translation, which had been very well received.
Mm-hmm.
So I to be honest with you, I watching the movie right today, I think it was just, you know, a matter of timing of when the movie came out in 2006. I mean, I guess not many people have tried to do this kind of anachronistic take on a period film, and especially a movie taking place in the 18th century, which is kind of like the peak of historical period drama. I'm not really sure. I think it could be the fact that, yes, she was a very young female director, mm-hmm. Taking on a heavy story. I mean, the story of Marie Antoinette up to the French Revolution.
So do you think she was maybe. We could maybe say the critics maybe had too high expectations of Sofia Coppola because she just came from Lost in Translation. Maybe the expectation was very high on one hand.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't recall. I think there are, it's hard to comment on why the film was polarizing. Just briefly looking at the critic response. When we were doing the research, we realized that the movie was better received in France than it was in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I think that tells us something about the expectations that people have of period films. And I'm just going to throw this here. You know, this is just, I'm making this up as I go, but I'm thinking, mm-hmm. you know, American audiences want their traditional period films served in French. Right, with you know, baroque music playing in the soundtrack, where the French people have had their history served up in any possible way throughout their lives, plays, paintings, movies, every possible take. So for them, I guess this was a newer, cooler way to see their history, where for the North American audiences, perhaps this is like, no, this is not what I want in a period film. Perhaps I want my traditional stuffy history served to me, right? So it could be that.
Yeah, and I think, because while researching, I read some of the reviews, I think why not? If they say, wow, this was really daring from an American, yeah, just to emphasize, yeah, for an American director to choose such an important piece of French history, how does she dare to portray this on screen? I think, why not? Yeah, that's the main question that goes through my head. Why not? It's her approach. And if she feels fascinated by this story, it's her view on it. So it's completely valid that someone like her chooses to do that. And also the choice of the cast for the main roles. It was her choice. She comes from that country and she wanted to portray the story from her point of view. So I think it's an absolute valid choice for someone like Sofia Coppola to go for such a French story and say, okay, I'm going to do it my way because this is where I come from. And this is what I know, and this is my touch and my view on this piece of history.
Yeah, 100%. Of course it's valid, 100%. What we need to keep in mind here is that we're not talking about just any Sofia. We're not talking about just any film
maker.
Little filmmaker from, you know, the tiny film school or whatever. This is Sofia Coppola. She comes with the weight of her family name on her shoulders. This is just, you know, and I think the expectations that place on to somebody like that probably are very heavy as well. And perhaps also why maybe in Europe it was better received because, you know, there's this love and respect for Hollywood films. I really don't know. This is a very difficult, you know, very difficult topic. But I think my feeling is that people have expectations of period film, and when they're not fulfilled, when they're not met, they're disappointed, because people want different things from period film. I know what I want, and what I want. As I learn more, as I become more open-minded, and the things I want to change. And so I think that's what disappoints people. But I think there's other valid criticism that we're going to touch as well, as a movie itself, mm-hmm. and as a genre movie as well. So it's not just the fact that she took very many liberties. I think there's other things that are very valid criticisms that we can get in
when we talk about this movie. But just to wrap up that topic, Nene, for you as a viewer, it doesn't disturb you that someone American makes a French story, or someone French goes into films an American piece of history?
No, for me as a viewer, I know that when I watched it the first time, it didn't quite work for me, because I was one of those viewers that had certain expectations of what I wanted to see in period film. When I saw
And you were maybe... I don't know, irritated by maybe the accent of the actors in dresses?
No, I don't think it was any of that. I don't think it was any of that. Even then, my criticism would have been with the movie itself, not the fact who made it or who acted on it. None of that. And if we have to remember to our first season, when we talk about Sense and Sensibility, which was a movie produced by Americans and directed by a Taiwanese director. So it for me, is true. In this case, it is not relevant, really. For me, this is a story about a woman. And any woman that wants to take on the story is welcome to do. Because Marie Antoinette herself is such a polarizing figure.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So
starting with that.
Exactly. So there's a million takes on Marie Antoinette, and this is just one of them. So I think my views have evolved. Like I enjoyed the movie a lot when I just watched it. Like I really enjoyed it, where my younger self was like, oh, well, you know, it's fun, but I wanted the formality of a French movie.
Exactly. So this is what I'm talking about, because when you refer to Sense and Sensibility and this mostly American producing team making a very British film, they made it very, very, very British.
Very British.
While Sofia Coppola made it very American to her way. Yeah. So this is maybe the contrast that we're facing with. Yeah, so either you really like it, how she which liberties she took to make the film from her very American point of view, or are you irritated and say, I want the full French Monty?
No, the full French, the full French Monty. Yeah, well, you know, this is not that movie. This is not your typical period film. So this is not the movie where you're gonna look for authenticity. This is a movie where you're gonna look for Sofia Coppola. If you have seen her, if you had seen her two previous films, The Virgin Suicides and Lost in Translation, her two movies up to the point, you were in for mood. You were in for feelings. You were in for impressionistic scenes and storytelling. And that's what she gives you in this movie.
That's what she gives you.
Yeah. So the next topic that you had outlined here, Gabby, for us to discuss we are already talking about it.
Yes.
Which is the style of the film. And you say it's too bubblegum. What do you think of that? Let's continue this conversation about the style of the film, this combination of historical and modern elements, for example, like music, incongruous dialogues. which I don't know exactly what it means.
I guess, Nene, this is exactly what made it, what made people talk so much about it back then, yeah? That she had, that she had a very, how can I say, modern view on this part of history. She combines so many pop elements in the film, and either you like this combination, either you like this full Versailles Palace costume display, but with punk music in the background. Either you love this, or you're completely irritated by it. Yeah, and this is something that she sprays all over the film. This is like, okay, Marie Antoinette was 14 when she came to France, so she tried to maybe, this is my analysis. She was a teenager when she came to France, so how would a teenager live in a palace back then? And this is what she said, okay, teenagers just fool around, they listen to music, they eat sweets.
They try on clothes.
They love shopping, you know. So, and this is, I guess, what made the people, you know, really go, make up your mind. Either you like this, either you can deal with this and you can relate to it or not. And I think this is what makes this film. This film is from 2006, and when in 2022 we're still talking about it. So it definitely left an imprint on film history because exactly of this. I think this approach of Sofia Coppola to the entire story. I want to make it look like this, you know, and how Marie Antoinette was really, in her teenage bubblegum, world bubble. This entire color, this entire cinematography of the film makes it kind of look bubblegum because it's a lot of pink and a lot of pastel colors and it's all shiny and glittery and beautiful. So I guess this is what she wants the audience to kind of think about it. Yeah? Can you deal with it or not? And with this, not all the music was modern, we have to say. Not all the music was modern. She picked very few moments, very key moments to put modern music. And I guess it was just exactly for that, to emphasize this. She was a teenager afterwards. They were teenagers after all, you know?
Yeah.
And knowing only key moments, she put this modern music. And the dialogues, Nene, the dialogues were kind of modern. Do you remember the scene when they're sitting at the breakfast table and she asks very awkwardly to the king, "So, do you have any hobbies?" This is certainly something that they didn't talk about in the 18th century. So either you like that, either you find it funny, you go along. Oh, well, you say, oh, whoa, this doesn't fit in the picture at all.
At all. I love your analysis. The fact that you're trying to get into Sofia Coppola's head and Sofia Coppola's approach is to say, yes, she was a young teen. I think she was maybe 13. Was she 14?
13, 14. I think I read 14.
14. 14 when she was, you know, handed over to France to create babies and the new Dauphin. This is pretty horrific for
modern. It's pretty horrific,
For our modern sensibilities.
Exactly.
Okay? I love your analysis that you're thinking, okay, Sofia Coppola is thinking, this is a teenager. How do we portray teenagers with all this power and the access to all this privilege? How do we portray that? And I think she succeeds in very much making her point of showing, you know, these are very young people living their best days. So there's a lot of emphasis. And this was, it's interesting because I was kind of going through Antonia Fraser's I whip out the Antonia Fraser again, because I do have that book. I do have her biography of Marie Antoinette at home. So I was quickly checking things. And, you know, she follows pretty well some of those moments she chose to depict. But I think she very much realizes her vision, that she wants to see how would young people behave with that amount of money and power and access to things. A lot of emphasis in friendships. And of course, Marie Antoinette had her favorites, Polignac, Lamballe, which are her best friends in the movie, of course, because they are her favorites, and lots of parties. And, you know, I think, again, my views in the movie have changed. When I watched it the first time, I was much more of a snob, and I enjoyed it, but I dismissed it. Where watching it now, I really, really enjoyed it, and I do have some serious criticisms of the movie, but not in the sense that Marie Antoinette that Sofia Coppola did not get her vision across. She absolutely got her vision across. We have to remember that the years she's covering, it's like about 20 years. I think Marie Antoinette was 36 or so when the French Revolution happened. So it's like quite a wide amount of time that she's trying to cover here. And she does pay attention to some changes in tone as she gets older. So I think the combination of historical and modern elements succeeds. Isn't my favorite. It is not my favorite. But I think she succeeds. I think the movie looks amazing.
Oh my gosh, so amazing.
This movie is spectacular. And these costumes are a fantasy. This is a dream.
Absolutely. It's a complete feast for the eye.
My goodness. I mean, let's emphasis on fantasy. This is a modern filmmaker's fantasy of the 18th century, right?
Yes.
You know, I bake a lot as well, and I try to, in my cakes, recreate the pastel colors of the 18th century, because it's fantasy of the 18th century. And Sofia Coppola's fantasy of the 18th century, based on the fashions, the paintings that were all around, is not inaccurate.
Absolutely not. But I love that, Nelly. I love that. I love what you mentioned, and that is her fantasy of that era. Because, well, when you think about, when you think about period film of the 18th century during or up to the French Revolution, you think, sweaty weeks, you know, I don't know, muddy shoes, whatever. And this is all.
Wait. We must stop. Hashtag sweaty weeks.
You know, people wearing the same dresses all over again, like what we spoke about in our review of Farewell, My Queen, which is also portraying Marie Antoinette, you know, and then we say, she was wearing the same dress all over again, yeah, because she was a servant, whatever. And this is completely different. This is a really bubblegum kind of fantasy. Of those times. And for me as a viewer, bring it on. I loved every lace, every shoe, every earring. I loved it all. So for me, it worked.
Yeah, well, for me too, it is so delicate and so delicate. Scratch that. It's just so full of color, vibrant, attention to detail. There's a few montage that are just magnificent. There's a montage where Marie Antoinette and her favorites, Lamballe and Polignac, are with her, and they're looking at fabrics and they're eating pastries. I mean, the pastries, just the pastries themselves. It's just there's constantly food around. There's always food and little cakes and constantly. They're always eating sweet. So it is true. It's beautiful. The set design, the production of this movie is extraordinary. And it's important to mention they did have access to Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Coppola name had that is my guess, and
which he certainly doesn't like to hear. But yeah, it might have.
Those exterior shots of the movie are incredible, especially that there's a very moving closing shot at the end of the movie. And of course, we hope you have seen this movie before you listen to the podcast, because there are spoilers. There's a beautiful shot of them leaving Versailles with the sun, you know, the sunrise. And she uses everything she has at hand to realize this fantasy. Another example. I think this is interesting because when Marie Antoinette is giving Le Petit Trianon by the mm-hmm. king, which was her kind of... her own little palace that she turned into this kind of fantasy land. For her, it was like her little farm. Mm. And she started to read Rousseau, and she starts to get into this whole back to nature philosophy, and she starts to wear these super, super fine muslin gowns that at the time made people appear naked. Because it was so translucent, and she popularizes this dress. And she's living Marie Antoinette. She's living in this countryside fantasy. And there's a whole sequence in the movie, beautifully done. I mean, and I think here's where I'm going to start to introduce my criticisms. It's extremely beautifully done. And it's Marie Antoinette's fantasy of a farm. Obviously, we know people mm-hmm. are starving. mm-hmm. Just in the outside of Paris, people don't have grain for bread. And here is Marie Antoinette with her little chickens and grabbing eggs and milking cows and all that tiny little lamb. So again, it's a fantasy within a fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is all shot beautifully, but it looks like what? What does it look like? Does it have any depth? Does it show anything about Marie Antoinette? I say no. This is all beautifully shot, like a Chanel commercial. It's extremely gorgeous to look like. Like, you know, fashion. And I'm gonna go on a tangent here. Fashion is about aspiration, and you have all these, you know, everything that fashion does is to get you into that fantasy mode. This is not real. And a lot of this movie feels that way. And mm-hmm. for me, this is where I, not in her choice of actors, not in her choice of anachronistic music, not in her choice of very modern dialogue, none of that. My criticism is in the superficiality of the story and what is underneath all these gorgeous, spectacularly amazing scenes and sequence, because it is gorgeous. But what
it is gorgeous?
What is underneath? What's your opinion of that?
Well, I definitely have to agree on the production on the cinematography, because I loved every little piece of it. Mm. And also her choice of light, how she uses light.
Yes.
Inside the palace and also on the outdoor scenes, she plays a lot with the sun, with the sunlight, which is it always looks good. Whatever you do with the sunlight,
gorgeous,
it always looks
gorgeous.
Good. Absolutely beautiful. I do have to disagree on the lack of depth, because, and maybe we have to now talk about Kirsten Dunst and Marie Antoinette, and what are we seeing on this film on Marie Antoinette. I disagree with that, Nenia, and I think it has a lot of depth. It shows a lot of sensitivity and a lot of emotion from a woman, a historical figure, from whom we have a very bad picture.
Mm-hmm.
We usually, what do we know of Marie Antoinette? She was a decadent, highly spending, gambling woman with love affairs, not caring for her country. This is pretty much, in a nutshell, what modern people know about, or what they think they know about Marie Antoinette. And as we said in the beginning, Sofia Coppola shows Antonia Fraser's biography of Marie Antoinette because she wanted to portray another face of Marie Antoinette in this film. She wanted to use historical base or historical approach that is more, that it has more empathy and for this character. How was she as a woman? And this is, I guess, what she achieves very well. She thought about, okay, this is a teenager becoming queen and bearing a huge burden of responsibility in a completely strange, foreign surrounding. So I think this is what she wanted to say. Okay, I'm going to look at Marie Antoinette like this, a pretty lonely teenager with a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, and this is where I get back to your question. I think Kirsten Dunst gives exactly the depth to Marie Antoinette, to this character, with her performance. There's so much feeling, what you mentioned also as well. There's so much feeling, so much of her, how she sees it, how she's constantly walking on this very, very thin limit of, this is kind of weird and decadent, but everybody does it. So how do I really position myself to this? You know, and you get that perfectly through her performance, through Kirsten Dunst's performance. You see the vision of Sofia Coppola. This is what I want to say about Marie Antoinette, and Kirsten Dunst portrays that perfectly in my view. And therefore, this is why I disagree. I think she gave it indeed a lot of depth, even in the part of the Petit Trianon scenes, where you see, okay, she, in the core, she wasn't really for the bubblegum, lazy palace life. In her core, she was fine with just being a mom and in touch with nature.
Yeah. No. I agree. Yeah. The one ex- great. I love your analysis of Kirsten Dunst's performance. And this is why my one exception in my comment about superficiality, my one exception in this entire movie is Kirsten Dunst. I wholeheartedly agree that her performance is absolutely brilliant.
It's a
gorgeous performance. And my goodness, Kirsten Dunst is so good. I watch anything she does. And in this movie, you are so right. She's constantly walking that very fine line between, you know, who am I here? And, mm-hmm. you know, I might as well just, you know, follow the, you know, the conventions of the court. And what she does very, very well is to show her kindness, her open heart from the very beginning when she hugs a member of the court, and then the lady's like, what are you doing? She's so, her face is so generous with everybody. She's completely innocent when she arrives in this court, and she remains so. And, you know, for what we know in Antonia Fraser's biography, Marie Antoinette was a dedicated mother. This was mm-hmm. This was one of the obviously most important things in her life. She was a very loving mother. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Marie Antoinette herself or her portrayal here is superficial. I think it's just the everything. Well, I did use the word impressionistic.
Yeah.
That it gives you the feeling of not the something itself. And I think my example of this, and it's kind of hilarious. Again, my exception is Kirsten Dunst. This is a portrayal. This is a performance.
If we compare it to, oh my gosh, Diane Kruger's portrayal of Marie Antoinette, and oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, if listeners to this podcast can go to our previous season when we talk about the movie Farewell, My Queen, where we have Diane Kruger as Marie Antoinette, we kind of discussed, like, we were going to compare the two. Yes. And here we are. I do agree with you, Gabby. This is a much more compelling portrayal mm-hmm. of Marie Antoinette. And, you know, something that is really beautiful about the portrayal here is how loving she was to the king. Yes. And how loyal she was to the king and mm-hmm. how she just wanted love. I think she's great. I think my criticism is in the surrounding. And here's my example. And I was trying to figure out what is it? Mm-hmm. There's two things, and I'm risking of going long here, but there's two things. I was never able to forget. I don't know why, that this is a Sofia Coppola film. I always felt like I was seeing Sofia Coppola growing up privileged under her dad. Right? She's a child of director. She's moving around in circles in Hollywood. She's a little queen in her kingdom in Hollywood. And I could never detach myself from the idea that this is Sofia Coppola and her friends moving about in Hollywood with all their privilege. And both the knowledge that they have it, but also their complete disregard for, you know, for the rest. I mean, yes, the movie is very relatable to her and her generation, but it's not to me. That was not my teenagehood. that's not how I live my teenage years. Right? So the reference point is something that is unknown to me. But I could never stop thinking, this is Sofia Coppola going about with her friends, going to parties. These are her reference points for portraying all of this and all this level and the weird things she must have seen moving about those circles, you know, and how she dealt with the weirdness of being a kid surrounded by all these Hollywood big heads and the weirdness and the parties and all this excess and how she tried to remain herself within this. So I never was able to forget this. It was constant in my head. The second example is there's a couple of scenes where we see the king making some political decisions and it all looks so super stage. It's like a little kid's play that they're putting on for the parents. Everybody puts their costume on. We're rolling. He says the line, yes, we're sending help to America. And put cut. And I think that there's something here that I have a hard time defining and pinpointing, which is Jason Schwartzman's performance as the king. You know, he portrays the king as this very kind of awkward, nerdy kid. Who's not interested in sex at all. He doesn't know how to do it. That's why it takes them so long to consummate the marriage, because he actually didn't know he had to put the key in the lock and turn it. This is in reference to the conversation he later has. And overall, just a good person who was aware he was too young to be king. To me, and this is the problem I have, and I guess this goes with the superficiality. For me, at times, especially when Jason Schwartzman is on screen, it feels like a bunch of kids putting on a play for their parents.
There you have it. This is exactly what she wants you to see and what she wants you to believe. She's just making you think, hey, you know, back then, they were just a bunch of kids deciding on the future of Europe. It was just a bunch of kids. I think it was, they achieved exactly the effect that they wanted to create.
Wow.
Bunch of people, Louis XVI being far too young, too inexperienced to bear that responsibility, being surrounded by old men who just tell him what to do. And out of the blue, he says, let's go for the American aid. Yeah. Whatever. I have no clue, but if they say I should do so, I do so.
Yeah.
I love that, Nene. I love that. Exactly what you say, that you, what you found superficial and what you struggled to deal with. I loved it. Exactly because the awkwardness of the situation was perfectly conveyed. Like he sits there and says, well, I'm actually just 18 or 19. Of course, we cannot compare an 18-year-old of the 18th century with an 18-year-old of today. We cannot compare it. But this is, I guess, what she wanted to achieve, this relatability. Okay,
yeah.
Just imagine you're 18 and you're king of France and you have to make this decision, whatever, you know?
Yeah. That's a very interesting point because what I'm seeing as a flaw, you're seeing, you know, this is what you want.
And I see it as a win, exactly. I see it as a win. And how she, because he always feels very lost and he's always like, as you mentioned, he was like a kind of nerdy, good-hearted, this is at least her portrayal of Louis the 16th. So, well, that sounds good. So why don't we just go for it, you know? And I have to say, now that we're talking about Jason Schwartzman, I'm not very familiar with many of his films, but I loved him in this film.
You did.
I loved his awkwardness and how he played the kind of lost, clueless boy because he's supposed to let Marie Antoinette shine in the film because the focus is on Marie Antoinette. So I think to kind of give more weight to this sensibility of Marie Antoinette, as you said, how she started reading Rousseau at some point of her life, you know, I think it was supposed to excel Marie Antoinette's kind of sympathy, make her look like a better person than what we know today, that they had to make Louis the 16th a little bit more clumsy, a little bit more clueless, you know, to make, okay, Marie Antoinette was the one who actually knew her way
back then.
And I loved him. I think he was a perfect choice.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. We have completely opposing views. like there's a scene near the end of the movie when there's a mob that goes to Versailles to demand to see the king, to demand to see the queen, and everything is so staged. But again, I think what you said is true. It's very intentional, but to me, it never feels authentic, or it's like they're standing there and he's standing there, a guard, like he's holding, it's more like a picture, it's more like a kid playing a role. There's something very mannered about it that it's just not my vibe.
Okay.
This doesn't take away from my enjoyment. I did enjoy this movie a lot. I want us to, before we go to our rating and to our kind of final conversation, can we talk about Count Fersen? Because this is a romantic story, right?
Yes.
There's a plot introduced, which is that Marie Antoinette meets a handsome Swedish soldier, I guess. I don't know what her rank was.
Well, he was a count, yeah.
What his rank was, but he meets him at a ball, and eventually he becomes her lover. What do you think? This was Jamie Dornan's first on-screen role. Before that, he was a model of the 50 Shades of Grey fame. And currently on Belfast, which is probably going to take the Best Picture Oscar. If he doesn't take it, he will most likely be nominated. So here we have it. That was his first role. I think he was great.
Well, Nene, I have my struggles with Jim. Just like you had your struggles with Jason Schwartzman. I have my struggles with Jamie Dornan because I am a little bit biased with, his infamous role in 50 Shades trilogy. So watching him in the film, I couldn't help thinking, okay, this is Christian.
Oh no.
Jamie Dornan, how can I say, he was actually for me a little bit passive in his role. It was a little bit passive. But I do have to admit, I did really like what this meant for the entire story. Exactly. Like the affair and how she kind of, how Marie Antoinette experienced love for the first time for real. Mm-hmm. They made it so subtle. They made it so nice. I loved all of that. But I didn't really get warm around Jamie Dornan. making him a lot of injustice, maybe. I don't know.
No. There's no chance. It's a tiny role.
There's no chance. Yeah.
It's a tiny role. It's just when I watched this movie, not for the podcast, but before, just for fun, last year, I was just watching it. And I was like, and before that, it's like, my goodness, what is that face? Who is that? Because there's this scene of him looking across the table and like, that's a gorgeous face. Who is this? And then it's like, oh my God, it's Jamie Dornan. It's like, oh yes. We are not supposed to think much of him. He really is on screen like a few minutes.
And he says very little.
But there's a gorgeous, gorgeous recreation of, oh my God, this movie looks amazing. This movie, and there's one scene when she is missing him and thinking of him. And that scene actually is great.
It's amazing.
When she's in bed imagining, oh my God, Kirsten Dunst.
She's daydreaming. Yeah, she's daydreaming in her love bubble.
Oh my God, she's so good. And she's daydreaming, mm-hmm. yeah, by a window. And she imagines him in war, like in this battle scene, like this very famous painting of
Napoleon.
Of Napoleon. And so Sofia Coppola kind of recreates this painting by, I think it's David. I could be mistaken. We have to research after of Napoleon in the horse, which is extremely famous. What a gorgeous! I mean, this is amazing. This is fun. And then she's in the bed, thinking of him, and what a performance! She's totally in love, and she blossoms.
Mm-hmm. She blossoms.
She blossoms
with love. Uh huh.
Yeah.
So beautiful. So Nene, when we soften our voice, when we talk about Marie Antoinette, we are touching one topic that I want to just talk about briefly. What do we see of Marie? Which face of Marie Antoinette do we see here? Does it make it justice to this historical character, or does it play it down? Because we know that Marie Antoinette was not just a soft, in love teenager. We know that she had a lot of power. So,
yeah.
Is this film really, really portraying, like, you know, giving it a heart to Marie Antoinette, or is it more troublesome that it's playing down the role of Marie Antoinette in her historical context?
Oh, Gabby, what a great question, and I think not an easy one to answer, because if we take the position of, you know, modern feminism, I don't know which generation this is, I don't know in which feminism wave we are in right now, you know, it gives permission to Marie Antoinette to be frivolous, to love fashion, to love shoes, to love her friends, to love dancing. It gives her permission to do all of those things and also be a loving mother, be a loving wife, be somebody who's very concerned about her role and the seriousness of her role. So it gives her the dimension that, you know, it's okay. You don't have to be this or the other. This is a very modern vision of womanhood, right? That you can... some, you know, previous were very much against anything feminine, femininity, the love of beauty, where we are all the way here, where that is okay. That doesn't detract from your power, from your intelligence. Mm-hmm. However, because for me, the film is so superficial, so I don't know if it adds or detracts. I think it's ultimately a positive portrayal, but I don't think it does much for her.
For Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Kirsten Dunst imbues this character with a lot of depth, but she's not portraying her as an intellectual or, yeah, all of the pieces that will show more power,
mm-hmm.
at least political power. No, we don't see any of that.
Nothing. Yeah.
None of that. It's loyalty to her king and country, to her yeah. children, her friends,
mm-hmm.
throughout.
Yeah, well, I think movie maker, you have to choose what you really want to portray. You have to kind of choose the path you want to go and then follow it all the way. Yeah. And I think maybe we can speculate. Maybe you said, okay, I'm gonna go this way. And I'm just going to make it like, okay, this is the story of a woman who comes to power and wants to experience love. And she's just a normal woman, like as a human being. And she just wants to experience love and she wants to enjoy life. But she's in this situation. Yeah. And of course, in that portrayal, she excludes all this political context because that barely plays a role in the entire film.
Yeah.
Which, of course, in that way can make people think, okay, Marie Antoinette was not just that nice girl, you know? So this is a whole bowls of, you know, nonsense. So I would say, in my eyes, I go along with what you say. I totally agree that it gives Marie Antoinette the chance to be a human being. A human being, a woman, a wife, and a mother, you know, if we think about it. Because in many other portrayals of Marie Antoinette on screen, and maybe also in books, I don't know, let's say on screen, on films, we expect too much of the historical person. Yeah. We expect too much of, okay, you are the Queen of France. You should have done something for your people, you know? And I think, as you mentioned, it portrays her, of course, very positive, which can be controversial because maybe she wasn't a saint as she was portrayed. But as a woman, as a mother and as a wife, I think she was, after all, a human being. She had the right to live that out.
And you know what? I think the movie itself doesn't do that. I think Kirsten Dunst does that. With what she was given. I think Kirsten Dunst gives much more depth and layers to the character than it was written.
Yes. I mean, she was definitely brilliant. She
is gorgeous. So I don't think it adds too much to the character. Do we learn anything more about her? I don't think so. I think the movie very much portrays the king and Marie Antoinette as victims, just victims of their destiny.
Of the system, yeah.
Of destiny, and really removes any responsibility they might have had in this whole mess, right? That France was in and being the monarch, being monarch, being part of this system. So the movie completely removes all of this. They were just victims of their money. They were born into money and they're victims of,
this court system of who do you have to like, who do you have to favorize. And
exactly.
Which is the danger? Which is the danger of choosing the path, you know? Because this is the tone of the film, yeah? She chose to portray them as victims of the system, of the context. Yeah. And you run the risk of playing history down.
Yeah. So if we quickly compare with the portrayal of Marie Antoinette in that movie, Farewell, My Queen, which you can go back to our first season and listen to our episode on that excellent, excellent movie. The Marie Antoinette we saw there was a frivolous, kind of out of control, flighty person, and she was portraying as somebody in love, a lover, somebody who will do anything for love, but not for her children.
For her lover.
Where here we get a much more rounded portrayal of her. She loves her brother. She respects the king. We see her in all these dimensions.
Yes.
So I have to agree, Gabby. This is a better portrayal.
of Marie Antoinette. Very good, Nene. So I guess to round it up, do you love it or do you hate it? You know, this is what we saw when we went back in the past and read the reviews of this film when it came out. They either praise it for this entire avant-garde style that Sofia Coppola brought in, or they hated it because of that, because of playing history down, because of adding punk music to it. Where do you stand? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Please give me your opinion on that, and maybe you can accentuate it by mentioning your favorite scenes in the film.
Oh yeah, okay. I love this movie. It is not my favorite period film, but it's an extremely gorgeous film to look at. So a lot of pleasures to be had watching this movie, in particular the production design. The fact that it was shot in Versailles, and the costume. This is just extraordinary, amazing work. Again, that superficiality is a minus for me, that it lacks a little depth. It really removes them too much from their own context, from their own responsibilities. It removes them a little bit too much from that historical weight that should be there to kind of make you feel, you know, what's at stake here. So I feel when you take that, you know, you remove it and you really only place it at the level of the parties, at the level of, you know, how she felt, and you take away all the historical context that should be underneath, it loses something. So a little bit more of that I would have liked. Favorite scenes? I would say, I think we just mentioned it. I think the scenes when she's daydreaming about Count Fersen and when he's gone are magnificent. There's another scene where, spoilers ahead, the brother of the king and his wife have a baby, and Marie Antoinette and Louis the 16, have not even consummated their marriage, and she completely breaks down. Absolutely gorgeous. Brilliant scene, gorgeous scene. So those are two of my favorites, and both of them, this movie is extremely gorgeous to look at, but these two scenes are all about Kirsten Dunst's performance and her face.
Totally. Well, Nene.
What about you, Gabby?
I loved it. I loved it. I have only one thing that I would see as a minus. Maybe, Nene, I loved it. And maybe you know me by now. I am always, I don't know. I like when a film throws tricky questions to your head. And I love this combination of the modern elements. Just like, for example, we talked about Bridgerton in our last season, that they also use modern music in Bridgerton. I love that. And why do I love it? Because, of course, it is a little bit far-fetched to say this, but somehow it makes it more relatable. You know, you're trying to tell the story of teenagers, and you have want to make teenagers understand it. You have to throw something to them. Yeah, I love the style. I didn't have any problems. Now I can remember that I was a little bit puzzled when I saw it when it came out 15 years ago. I was like, okay. But I still liked it a lot. I was kind of fascinated, but I still couldn't pinpoint it. And now that I've seen it again, I loved every bit of it. Exactly because of that. When they go into this masked ball and the music is just punk. It's just like a punk rocky party, you know, and it's like, this is just great.
Oh, that scene is
really great. When she in that masked ball, she meets Confessen, and they're just like dancing on the dance floor, and the music is very punky and very funky. I love every bit of that. Two favorite scenes. additional to the ones you've mentioned, because the one where she runs through the palace to cry in her room because she realizes that her sister-in-law has had a baby and she doesn't even know how to make love. Well, hasn't done it yet. It is so moving. It is like you feel every pore of her suffering. You feel it when she's crying in her room. So I love that one too. But there's two more scenes that I love. And one is when they have a summer party and Confersen is there. You mentioned Confersen looking at her through the table. And they have a summer party and all her friends are hanging around in all these white gowns, summerly white gowns. And you see the lights of these lampions outside. And they have this summer party. And they include a modern element in this. They play this. Yeah, they play this game where they glue the papers on the forehead and they have to guess the character. I love that. I love that. Again, because it makes you think like, okay, these were very young people. She's still like trying to take that story and put it today in context. And so what would do a bunch of rich teenagers do if they gather for a summer party? They would play that game. I loved it because it's so beautifully done. As just mentioned, the cinematography is just gorgeous. And because it's funny, because of this funny touch, you know, how about we have a bunch of courtiers in the 18th century playing that game with the paper on the forehead. I love that one. And the second one that I really, really loved, well, I guess I've mentioned it, when she runs into a room and she cries her head off because she's so moved. I think, as you mentioned, Kirsten Dunst is unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, Gabby, that's like, that whole sequence of the summer party is amazing.
It's amazing. And they smoke pot. Yeah, it was like opium.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But again, it is very impressionistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like the conversations have no depth. It's just little bits of things.
Yeah.
And throughout the dialogue is like that. Like you hear little bits of conversation here and there that means nothing. And it's just like you're floating around this thing. She wants to give you an impression of what he must have felt. That whole,
exactly.
I agree with that.
Atmosphere.
Yeah. Atmosphere. And they see the sunset. But again, all of this is like, this is Sofia Coppola with her friends in Hollywood going after, you know, spending the whole night partying and then going to, you know, it's morning and they're going to see the dawn in one of these hills in Hollywood. For me, it's like entire thing. Like,
but you know, I didn't suffer that much from that comparison. I didn't transport that.
I don't know why. Sofia,
because I haven't really followed Sofia Coppola's life, Korean, whatever. So I wasn't really biased by that fact, but I completely follow you. I completely understand your struggle there.
Yeah. No, but you know, not to take anything away. It's just that is the connection I made. It's like, I don't know why I could not separate the two. It was still extremely enjoyable. So Gabby, now that we have gone through this whole discussion of this truly, truly wonderful film, how many wicks and candles do you give Marie Antoinette by Sofia Coppola?
This is a hard one because I'm going to get emotional again. I'm torn between 8 and 9, which is pretty high. And the only minus point that I have is the pace of the storytelling, that she spent, let's say, 3/4 of the film at the early years of her life. And then when it gets interesting, you know, with her affair with Confersen, the entire thing with her kids, being a mother plays such a big role for her, yeah? And all the thing having her kids, how her one kid dies and so on, and leading up to the tension of the French Revolution, that was kind of done too shortly compressed towards the end. So the pace of the storytelling was somehow not really balanced.
Okay.
That's pretty much the only thing that I would criticize.
So are you giving it 8.5 candles?
Let's go for 8.5.
All right. Well, that's the first. wigs and candles. We don't usually give half candles because here we have, I guess we have enough money to buy full candles to give.
I'm very curious to hear about your rating.
I'm going to give it an 8. And it is, I'm giving it an 8, not because of the anachronistic choices. I think all of that is very well done, very well realized. The candy color, the music, the modern music. I think there's a moment where there's a pair of Converse. I missed that, but apparently there's a pair of Converse.
But that was intentional.
Exactly. It was intentional.
Light blue puzzle chucks. I loved it.
Yeah, I missed it. So I have no issues whatsoever with any of those choices. I think it's very smartly, done, very successful. The reason is that for me, it's a bit too impressionistic. Going back to that, it's just too much floating above the history to feel what is at stake. So I would have liked a stronger base for the story, you know, for the weight of the story to pull it down a little bit from. A little bit from the cotton candy clouds of Le Petit Trianon, and mm-hmm. for me that would have made it you know, a little bit more compelling, but an absolute, you know, absolute pleasure to watch this movie, and I've seen it many times in fact, so which means I love it because I go back to it and I watch it and I enjoy it. Do I learn new things about history or Marie Antoinette through this movie? Not really, but it's fun.
It's fun. And I think this is what I meant to say. As a movie maker, you have to choose which path do you want to go? Do you want to portray do you want to make like a historical film? Then you have to maybe make some compromises, or you want to tell the story of a person?
Absolutely.
I don't know.
She made her choice. It's a romantic story.
About a teenager with a lot of money.
Yeah, this is not a historical film in exactly. any way, shape, or form. It is a fun, fluffy film, but hold together by an amazing, and we have said this like how many times already, incredible, beautiful performer for Kirsten Dunst.
If I may say so, I have another favorite scene before we wrap up. Just to accentuate again how great Kirsten Dunst was. There's a scene where her brother comes from Austria to visit them because they haven't really consummated their marriage and they're very concerned. And she's so happy to have him around. And he comes to her room and they sit down at a table and they drink tea. And she she does this, she commends the entire tea drinking so nicely. She's like, take a look at this tea. Look at the flower. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? I got it from the Chinese emperor. It's jasmine. And she commends it just like, you know, it's jasmine. I loved it. I loved it because of this. She was just enjoying she had a lot of things that brought her joy, but the little joys of life, she was like, oh, look at this tea and this flower in the cup. It opens up. Isn't it amazing? It's jasmine.
Yeah, and it was given to me by the emperor.
For me, that was just so nice. I love that scene.
There you go. That's Sofia Coppola enjoying the privilege of being the daughter of Francis Ford Coppola. Yeah, no, this nice, that what? This little jacket? Yeah, it was given to me by who knows? Anyway, Gabby, that's a great scene. Yeah, and we could talk about this movie for longer, but I think we have to wrap it up here. Thank you so much for this discussion. I really enjoy it, Gabby. I really love your insight. And I hope for our listeners, thank you for listening. And we hope to see you very soon.
Thanks for listening and join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Morgan Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.